I think every child is born as a scientist. You know, when you're 2 or 3 years old and you're asking, but why? And, you know, why is the sky blue? Or you're trying to take things apart. You know, we're born with this natural inquisitive nature that is aligned to how a scientist views the world. And then I think what happens over the course of schooling or the course of education is that, you know, schooling oftentimes beats the scientist out of children. And so I've always been a person who was curious about the world, always asked questions. I was the kid who would take apart my mom's remote control and you know, would play in the dirt and try to find bugs. So I've always been intrigued by science, but it's beyond science. I've always been an inquisitive person. And while schools may have taken that inquisitive nature out of me, I was lucky enough to be in a home where my mom sort of really supported my thinking, my writing, my being creative, my you know, my being an oddball of sorts. And that sustained me for a while. And until I got to the point where I was able to make a decision to be a scientist.
I'm curious as to what your early days of teaching were like and kind of how you've evolved since then.
I've evolved tremendously. I mean, I remember my first job was in a middle school in New York City. And the first thing I wanted to do was teach like every other teacher that I had. You know, I figured that was the way to do it. So I'd teach like they taught, but I'd be cool enough where they'd want to learn stuff from me.
And that
I learned rather quickly that I wasn't that cool. And then I got to a juncture where I got frustrated with teaching in a middle school, and I helped to start a small high school in New York City because I just wanted to do things differently. Mm-hmm. And in that school, at that school, Marie Curie High School in the Bronx, I really started thinking about how to be more creative with teaching, how to take more risks, you know, how to do things that may not be seen as the norm, but I knew would capture the interests of young people. So I began as a traditional teacher who thought that, you know, I could add a little bit of cool factor and make things interesting. I realized that didn't work. And then I went to sort of start things anew and then just started experimenting with everything from, you know, giving kids cards to show when they were really engaged so they could have some positive reinforcement in the classroom, to using more video in the classroom to see if, you know, the visual learners could be more turned on. And that, you know, over time evolved into utilizing youth culture as the anchor for instruction. And that part came just from seeing kids outside of class just super engaged and excited, you know, their eyes lighting up and, you know, laughing and, you know, just like talking back and forth to each other and engaged, and then seeing those same kids in classrooms like falling asleep and bored. And I was like, there's something that's going on out there that I've got to be able to use. Yeah, there's got to be something different that I can employ from what they do outside of the classroom to bring into the classroom. And that kind of tells the story of my evolution as an educator.
What is wrong with that traditional approach that you started out with? I mean, why do teachers fail to kind of engage students and in particular in science?
Well, you know, traditional approaches to teaching and learning do work in certain spaces. They work when you're dealing with populations whose ways of knowing and being are aligned to those modes of instruction. So if I come from a two-parent family where I grow up seeing mom reading the newspaper and dad reading a book on his free time, and things are structured so we go to family events together and we sit together at the dining table, the nature of that kind of structured experience, that upper white middle class experience, it aligns to modes of traditional instruction. And for populations who are from backgrounds that are more traditional, traditional instruction works. The problem with the field of education is that we are dealing with a wide array of people with a wide array of cultures, with various backgrounds, with different socioeconomic classes. And so we cannot expect a generic approach to teaching and learning to work for everyone. The nature of teaching and learning has to accommodate different populations based on what they need to be engaged. You know, one of my favorite sayings is that students are different. The issue is to understand that different does not mean deficient. It just means that the nature of the instruction has to vary to match the cultural dispositions, the cultural needs, the cultural experiences of different populations.
A lot of your teaching also focuses on kind of this idea of understanding the youth culture.
Absolutely.
Of understanding what that is.
Yeah.
I guess explain what you mean by youth culture in that sense.
I mean, youth culture is, it's understanding that by virtue of being between 6 and 18 or 19, there's a certain way that you look at the world. There's a certain way that you experience the world is very different from the ways that those who are older do. And, you know, also, there's a certain piece of youth identity that cannot be captured by folks who are not experiencing the same things they are. There's something about that youthful angst. There's something about that youthful frustration. There's something about the altruistic nature of just caring about other people mm-hmm. that adulthood sort of forces you to lose, you know? And I think that if teachers or parents even, I mean, my work, people oftentimes view it as, this guy tells folks how to make education differently for teachers in schools. You know, I think my research and my experiences are more of ways to engage with young people to get them to expand their possibilities. That's applicable to teachers, but also to parents and also to folks in faith ministries, et cetera. It's about mm-hmm. understanding the nuances of the culture of young people. So, and in youth culture is understanding all those dynamics, you know, where they are developmentally, where they are culturally, where they are experientially, and most importantly, what forms of culture are attuned to their ways of knowing and being. Like, mm-hmm. what are they listening to and why are they listening to it?
What are they listening to? What is connecting with them culturally?
Music wise, I find that hip hop is the culture of young people, even if they don't listen to hip hop music. It's a big difference between hip hop music and hip hop culture. I think hip hop culture is Americana. I think youth who listen to rock music, who listen to country music, who listen to, soft ballads are part of a hip hop generation. Because what's happened with hip hop is that hip hop as a cultural art form has infiltrated all forms of music. You find hip hop elements in everything. And so hip hop to me, it's the crux of youth culture. The music, the art, the ways of dress, the ways of knowing, the ways of seeing, being, experiencing the world. So understanding hip hop means understanding youth culture.
When I think of science, I remember my science classes in high school. I took physics and biology and all that kind of thing. And I remember them kind of being these really experiences that were very objective. Like there's an answer.
Yep.
And I have to, and that's it. Like I have to get to that answer, whatever that is. And then if it changes at all, it's just another answer that then I have to get to that answer. And being kind of removed in a sense. Yeah. And here you're taking hip hop, which is, this creativity and this flow and this playfulness to it. And I'm just like, how do we get these to work together? How do these seemingly very different things become kind of cohesive to teach and engage students?
You know, the notion, like what you describe as seemingly variant, is that's a piece that gets me, because science is so different than the way that science is taught in schools. I mean, when I think about science, I think about science when I was in schools, and I can describe it the same way that you described it. Mm-hmm. But when I think about science and how scientists make sense of the world, oh my God, it's beautiful. It is hip hop. There is
it
flow.
Is
oh, absolutely.
All right.
Scientists are posing questions about the universe, about what they observe, and then they're going out there and finding out how and why what they think works or does not work. Scientists are going out there and sharing information with a body of other people who are also scientists and trying to convince them that the ideas work. That's not about an answer. Mm-hmm. That's about convincing folks. That's about being creative and how you come up with ideas and conjecture, how you theorize concepts and how you take ideas that already existed and you remix them.
Okay.
And try to recreate and rehash them. Science is about who can ask the most profound questions. And science is not about finding the right answer. Not at all.
Okay.
Science is about asking the right questions. The most prolific scientists of our time have been those who were able to ask questions that people before them didn't think. They weren't the people who gave us the finite answers. I think we've been conditioned to believe that science is this objectivist discipline, when in reality, it's very subjective. I mean, think about, a scientist in a laboratory does not conduct an experiment on something that he's not interested in. You have to be passionate about it first.
Yeah.
And so I think hip hop and science are so closely related. I explore these concepts in my book. So in Urban Science Education for the Hip Hop Generation, I talk about hip hop culture and I talk about science as well. But I also talk about the fact that hip hop and science are so deeply attuned. I mean, hip hop artists speak in metaphor and analogy, and they use artistic interpretations to make sense of the environment. I mean, how is that different from what a research scientist does? I think there's a big difference between school science and actual science. And unfortunately, the nature of school science is completely antithetical to the nature of science. And if we can teach young people what science truly is, they'll realize that who they are is actually synonymous with being a scientist.
And one of the ways you've tried to do that is with the project you launched last year. It's called Science Genius Battles, which stands for Bring Attention to Transforming Teaching, Learning, and Engagement in Science.
Yes.
Tell us about this project. It's really cool.
Well, the Science Genius Battles is a partnership with rap icon, GZA from the Wu-Tang Clan. Yeah. And GZA is a science enthusiast. You know, he's a guy who always wanted to be a scientist. Before he wanted to be a rapper, he wanted to be a scientist. And all along, throughout his career, he's sort of incorporated science rhymes and you know, science concepts into his lyrical repertoire. And so Science Genius Battles, you know, is an effort to make the 10th grader that GZA was before he left school and decided to be a hip hopper to stay in science. And to do so, we began with 10 New York City public schools. We spoke to the teachers and we spoke to the principals and said, listen, we just want to come in here and give kids another way of showcasing their knowledge. And these are kids who are deeply immersed in hip-hop culture across New York City public schools. So instead of writing an assignment at the end or going and answering some boring questions at the end of class, we want them to be able to go home and write raps about the science content that they're learning in school and that are required on the state exams anyway. Okay. You know, all we're doing is giving you guys a different tool to assess this knowledge. And, you know, they said, what if the kids can't rap? If they can't rap, have them write a rhyme anyway, because writing a rhyme helps them to learn the information anyway. Do you realize the deep intellectual process that goes into, one, understanding the information, grasping that concept, and then being able to write a story about it, and then making sure that story rhymes? You know, everybody benefits from writing raps. And so we have the kids go out there in these schools, and they all write raps, and in each of the schools, there's a science battle. In hip-hop, the art of the battle is when you have two MCs facing off and they're rapping about each other's lives and families and mothers and if I have more money than you and if I...
Playing the dozens.
You know, they're essentially playing the dozens.
Yeah.
And so a science genius battle is kids doing... They're writing raps about science concepts and battling each other for who knows the most science content. You know, who's the most prolific scientist and who's the best rapper and scientist. So in each of these classrooms and these schools, the kids are battling out, and in each classroom has a science genius winner. So I'm the winner in class 904. I'm the best science rapper. I know my science. I'm a great artist. I battle then a student from another class, and we'll have a school-wide battle. Then we have a representative from each of the schools who is like the winner, almost following the model of the National Scripps Spelling Bee, right? So you have the spelling bee champion of your school. We have the science genius rapper of the school. And then each of the kids who rap in the school, who wins the competition, we brought them down to Columbia University, a teacher's college, and we had a citywide battle.
Yeah.
Oh, man, it was intense. You know, we had students from each of the schools coming there to represent their friends. We had scientists and rappers on stage judging, and the kids all performed, and the judges went and deliberated, and then they selected the one winner. And the one winner is a New York City science genius. You know, it's a huge title to have. And so we ran this pilot project. We had the one winner. In the schools where we did this work, the kids were more engaged in science. They were more likely to take science classes. They were more engaged in class. They showed up to school more often. You know, all sorts of
all
amazing things that benefits happen in addition to them learning science.
Yeah.
And so it's been an amazing project. That was phase one of our pilot project was last year. Phase two of the pilot is this year. We're expanding to 10 more New York City public schools. And we're hoping that by the fall, we'll expand to more cities across the country.
All over.
Yeah.
And I want to take a listen to the winner now. That was Jabari Johnson, and his song was called Quest for Jewelry.
Yes.
A play on the measurement unit
Check.
Of jewels.
This concept is applied to all lives. We strive time distance, be a witness to the prize. Be a man, understand you comprehending this is vital work. Equals FD, the equation for survival. Your only rival is friction, don't get caught up in the drag. You better prepare, cause obstacles fight back. When you get knocked down, no, please don't cry. Just get up and apply more force next time. One day, I was dreaming with a really strong...
That was Quest for Jewelry, the winner of the Science Genius Battles. That was, I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Listening to that is absolutely amazing. And it's, I mean, just the from the lyrical standpoint alone, and then the content.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the process like? I mean, what did it take for him to get to that point, or for students to get to that point?
So let me tell you this. I mean, Jabari won, but there were some gifted young people who were brilliant. And when I say gifted young people, they were kids who were in the schools who... You know, didn't win the school battle, but you know, it's like, you know how in the spelling bee, you know, you miss one letter,
you're done.
There are kids who just missed being the representative from their school because of one slip up of one factual scientific, you know, detail or factoid that was lost. So the level of brilliance of young people once given the opportunity to express their knowledge and their passion for learning in a different way is mind boggling. Every single day that I hear a kid writing a science rap, I'm amazed. I mean, you know, we've also had students who were not a part of the project who heard about the project and said, well, I'm writing a science rap too. And they'll email me or, you know, they'll send me a tweet with, yeah, with their rap. And it's you know, I'm so overwhelmed by the brilliance of young people and the passion of young people and their dedication to educational pursuits and their dedication to the sciences when all we have to do is teach them differently and give them a different method for assessing their knowledge. And then the world opens up.
You mentioned Twitter briefly there, and yeah, you're also a part of what you're doing is trying to provide opportunities for people to ask who are interested in incorporating, yeah, hip-hop and into education. Tell me a little bit about how that Twitter handle or hashtag works.
Sure. I mean, you know, I'm a firm believer in the fact that if we have something that works, then it's my responsibility as an educator to share that with as many people as possible. Mm-hmm. And so I am on social media. My Twitter handle is at Chris Emdin, at C-H-R-I-S-E-M-D-I-N. Feel free to follow me to ask questions about this work on the intersections of hip hop and education. But what I did is I partnered up with a young man named Brandon Frame, who is a school administrator in Connecticut. And we just started tweeting back and forth to each other about hip hop and education. And then we decided, hey, why don't we use a hashtag? Why don't we just say, you know, pound #HIPHOPED, so we don't lose ourselves in all these tweets and we could follow each other's conversations. Well, that was 3 years ago. And we decided that we'd meet every Tuesday. And then since then, we met with another core group of educators. I'll say their names. Timothy Jones, at TDJ6899 on Twitter. Emil Cook, at AMILCOOK on Twitter. At Hustlington on Twitter also, Sam Seidel. And so we ended up growing from these two people to about four or five people who would now talk about hip-hop and education. And we'd meet every Tuesday. And 3 years later, we haven't missed a Tuesday. And we just talk about how hip-hop and education have come together. And we've created a space where anybody who has questions about how hip-hop and education may or may not work can ask questions. We'll get tweets like, well, how do I use a Jay-Z lyric in my English classroom? You know, what is this thing called a rap cipher anyway? And how can my kids do it? How can I try Science Genius in my class? And so we open up the space for people to ask us questions, and we are experts in this work, so we share answers to these questions. And now every Tuesday night at 9 p.m., we have this ongoing chat. With a wide array of topics, is Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern. And it's just an ongoing conversation that's grown from two people to five people to weekly about 1,500 to 1,700 people who get on Twitter every night using the hashtag #HipHopEd, having conversations about the intersections of hip-hop and education, and also sharing resources. So we mm-hmm. share lesson plans, we share curricula, we share, you know, music that may not have profanity that I could bring into the classroom. You know, it's just we've created this online community to make #HipHopEd a global thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's also grown to become an offline movement. So now we have, like, #HipHopEd meetups. where people meet in person to talk about the intersections of hip-hop and education. There's a UK hip-hop ed group that's splintered off from our group because there are educators in the UK who also think about the intersections of hip-hop and education. We have mm-hmm. a Toronto hip-hop ed group. And so, you know, this small conversation based on my passion for bringing hip-hop to education has grown into a worldwide movement of like-minded folks who want to transform education for the better and want to focus on youth culture. You know, last chat we had, I think we had, you know, over 2 million web imprints.
It's reaching a lot of people.
It's reaching a lot of people, and we're going to continue to do the work because, you know, we need this in the world of education. And we know, based on research, but also based on anecdotes, that, you know, this is part of the answer. This is part of the solution.
You mentioned earlier that you're working on a book. Any other upcoming projects for you?
Yeah. So, you know, first and foremost is Science Genius is growing. Science Genius is hopefully going to be expanded to more cities across the United States. I'm looking to bring Science Genius to some major spaces in Michigan, hopefully. You know, thinking about Science Genius Detroit and what that might look like. Science Genius Atlanta. We have Science Genius New York. Science Genius South Africa. So that's growing. My new book, Reality Pedagogy. It's really talking about, you know, how to teach, focus on the reality of youth experiences by giving teachers really practical tools. I'm finally finishing it. It should be out this time next year. My current book is out, Urban Science Education for the Hip Hop Generation. It's on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. And I describe it as literally an unedited stream of consciousness about the intersections of science, hip hop, and education. I just poured it all out and said, mm-hmm. you know, let them figure it out. Jabari Johnson, winner of Science Genius, is going to be releasing it's called a Science Genius EP, which is a five-song album based on science concepts. And then, you know, hip hop as a movement is growing. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, I wake up in the morning and I get emails from folks who are saying, you know, we tried this thing that we got on the hip hop ed hashtag and it's making this kind of difference in my classroom. You know, I get emails from kids saying, thank you for making me know I'm a scientist. And so I know I've stumbled upon something great. And then with a partnership with an icon like GZA, I mean, who is not just like a celebrity, you know, endorser. And this is important to note. You know, this is a guy who really believes in the power of hip hop and education. You know, this is a multi-platinum selling artist who comes into New York City public schools and coaches kids on rapping, you know, and performs for them. You know, and, you know, you see this, you know, this big icon sit, you know, kids are sitting and he's on his knee, you know, looking them in the eye and telling them that they can do this. I have my hands full.
Yeah.
But it's just the most amazing and gratifying work anyone can do.
You know, your work, as we've talked about, it focuses so much on what students actually need. Their needs, the whole kind of metaphor of you can't give everyone a size 9 shoe to run the race. They need the size shoes that they need.
Right.
And right now, education is so much, it's about standards.
Yep.
It's all about, you know, standard testing.
Yep.
Every school needs to be standard and uniform. How do you see that transition or shift moving away from this idea of standards?
Well, you know, if I can be one of the champions to move against the current climate in education, you know, I do so proudly. I've been described as a provocateur, and I am one, not for the purpose of just being one, but for the purpose of understanding what is needed in the current standards-driven era. And I'm not completely antithetical. You know, I'm not antithetical, but I'm not completely against all standards. I am against standards at the expense of learning. I'm against standards to the point where there's no space to be inquisitive. There's no space to spark innovation, and there's no space for imagination. I feel like there is a shift. I mean, something like hip-hop ed doesn't happen if there weren't educators and parents saying we want something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think something like the Next Generation Science Standards was a new set of standards that have been pushed by a bunch of scientists and educators reflect this shift where they are standards, mm-hmm. meaning things that we want people to be able to do. But at the same time, built into those standards are these spaces for kids to use inquiry, to be creative, to make sense of material, to be college ready, to be more prepared. Once you start hearing that type of language, you start realizing that folks who are making the decisions are realizing that what they've done for so long is no longer working. I mean, we've done in education, all we've done for the last, I would argue, 100 years is a regurgitation of the same age-old practices. This idea of a standards-based and test-driven environment is not something that's a new thing. You know, this is something that we've inherited. And so, you know, it's time to try and do an experiment with something new. And if I can and hip-hop ed can, be one of the folks who spearhead this new movement, then so be it.
Chris Hemden, thank you so much for stopping by and chatting.
It's an absolute pleasure to be here. And, you know, I look forward to having your audience join us on Hip Hop Ed. To even if you're not completely convinced about this being, you know, the best thing for your kid, to be a part of the conversation, because we can't move the agenda forward without having some dialogue about it. And on social media, we can have that dialogue.
Christopher Emden is an associate professor in the Department of Mathematics, Science, and Technology at the Teachers College at Columbia University. He also currently serves as the Caperton Fellow and Hip Hop Archive Fellow at the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute at Harvard University.